Welcome to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein here in the Yeshiva Shalmaila. This week's topic, gun control in Halacha. Unless you've been living in a, I don't know, in a hideout someplace, you know that last week, 17 children, including 5 kids who attended Chabad, were killed at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School by some evil young man carrying an AR-15 assault weapon. Why do we need assault weapons sold, you know, in stores is beyond me. So we're going to be speaking to gun control and halacha. Our guests will be Rabbi Chaim Steinmetz. He's the Rav of Kehillas Yeshurun in the Upper East Side. He's also a Talmud of Rav Moshe Shapiro, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. We will have Rabbi Stephen Przanski, one of the most famous rabbis in America from Bnei Yeshurun in Teaneck. And he is a noted Republican, you know, anti-gun control. We'll have the other side of the picture. And I think he will present an interesting argument that even though the Shulchan Aruch says Ein Moichrin La'akum Klei Zayin, we don't sell them Zayin or Klei Zayin. He says, but what about the Second Amendment? The Shulchan Aruch does say to protect yourselves, to the Magnu Alayu, where the Goyim you're allowed to. Maybe the Second Amendment falls under that interesting argument. We will have Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz, the Rav of Woodmere. He is the most more shurim on the internet for him than any Rav in the world, to my knowledge. So we have really an all-star lineup. Interesting topic. We do have, this week, by the way, is my father, Zecharon Levracha, Reb Shmuel Tzvi Ben Chaim Shraga. I want to make this shir in his memory. He was a Adam Kosher. He's learned his whole life about Smadha Gedaila. And, you know, when we say in Kaddish Rabbanon, here's an interesting word. We say, Al Yisrael, V'Rabbanon, V'Al Talmidein, that they're Talmidim, they're Talmidim's Talmeim, Al Koman the Askin Barais. And then we add in Basra Hadein, V'Dibachal Asar V'Asar. What are we adding? We've already mentioned everything. And I say, when we say, Koman the Askin Barais, Basra Hadein, V'Dibachal Asar V'Asar, in every possible location, we're referring to the holy souls in Gan Eden. That what are they doing? They're sitting and they're learning Torah. B'chol asar v'asar, may this program be in his memory of a holy and special Jew. Last week we asked a riddle. We said, according to Reb Chaim Briscoe, who's mechadish, that once you mekayim a mitzvah, you can't. The mitzvah's done, and there's no possibility of hiddur. So we said, why by the end of the Megillah, when they lain the last pasuk, Mordechai Yehudi from the Ksav, everybody's yaitzeh b'diavad. Then when the Balkai reads it, Yaitzeh l'chatchila, according to Reb Chaim, it's too late, the mitzvah's over. And we got a lot of responses. And by the way, you can listen to all our responses online. And we are starting now a new feature next week that if you listen by phone, you'll be able to listen. You could click a button to listen to the responses by phone as well. And boy, we got a lot of responses, a lot of argue with me. And here's an interesting voicemail about some of the rischa d'iraisa that this shir, this program creates. Here, listen to this voicemail. I got a kick out of it.
Good morning, Rabbi Lichtenstein. I like to say to you and the show, doing a lot for the world peace. What I mean by that is like this. I once heard from Rabbi Zelig Berkowitz, who I believe is your brother, correct me if I'm wrong. But I heard from him, B'Shem Zechassam Sefer. And Sefer said, Chazal say, Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Be'olam. And he explained it to this Maimer Chazal to mean like this, that it's nigzar around the world, that the world has per year X amount of Muhammad the world must undergo. Certain amount of Muhammad. Talmidei Chachamim with the Muhammad Shal Tehra, Rizcha Deraisa. Abu B'nai Nassim saying is that, Zil of that. Rabbi Talmidei. All the mitzvahs they raise, their mochamis count towards the gzera. They actually deduct from the gzera. So it would be nigzar on the world have 1,000 mochamis of the mochamis of Torah, as many mochamis of Torah that there are, that will deduct from the amount fearing the world from having to suffer from those extra mochamis. I think all the mochamis of Torah that you show has generated, the show is definitely saving the world from a lot of Muhammad, creating peace, and it should be nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize.
So there you've heard it, folks. The first and last time I will ever be nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. So we got a lot of answers. They basically, if you listen to the answers online, they're two dissect two basic mahalchim. Some say, well, you don't have kavana to be yaitzi, you just want to do it for prasum and nisa, etc. Well, my response to you is, why I would reject, you know, have problems with this answer, is because the Shulchan Aruch and Simon Samach, many achrayinim, I don't know if it's Rav achrayinim, I think, you know, the Magen Avram and many, the Goyen argues famously, hold that by mitzvah drabanan, you don't need kavana. So as soon as you said it, prasum and nisa or otherwise, Yaitza, sorry, done, finished, chalas, nigmar, right? According to all these paiskim. So once you said it, you're done. So what does it matter? You didn't have kavana. You don't need kavana. And some people say, maybe you had kavana, lehepach. I challenge you, Adala, go into your average shul and look at your average man, or certainly, you know, the women, and say, excuse me, did you have kavana, lehepach? And look at the googly eyes that you're going to get back from them. So he's certainly not kavana lehepach, and Stam has a din of lekavana, so I don't think that this answer cuts it, honestly. Whereas I once went into Reb Nachum, and I told him, he answered one of his kashas, and he looked at me, he says, I have a bed of teretz. I said, what's the bed of teretz? He said, sarachi, and that's to this. Now, there is another answer that Reb Asher, why somebody sent it to me, which I got a kick out of, because when he was actually by me, I asked him this question a number of years ago, and he thought it was very interesting. But also, I heard it from, it's, at least we got at least 30 or 40 people who responded this way, that there's a difference between hider mitzvah and just being yaitza mitzvah and lechatchila and bedieved. When I was in Eretz Yisrael 2 years ago, I asked this kail to an old chavrus of mine, the guy in Reb Asher Yehli, and he said this too. But here's the problem with that answer as well, and that is, if you look in the poskim, it's very not clear if this is true, and I'll give you an example. You know, when you say karbanis, you say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu, the reason is, in case your ma'acher is man kriya Shema, so this way, earlier in the davening, you were ready yaitzi yechap derayin. So Magen Avram says, but be careful to have kavana that if late you're saying kriya shema without the brachas, it's a bidyevid. You're supposed to say kriya shema birchaseh, two before, two after. So he says, therefore, should have kavana that if you're going to chap ayin, if you're going to catch shema Yisrael bizmanai later on in the birchas kriya shema, that you have kavana not to be yaitzi here. Now, L'chayr, if you said it here, Yaitza Kriya Shema, it's just B'dievet. And yet the Magen Avram says, you can't fix it later on. And the Beis Yosef, by the way, says the same thing. Many other posts can bring this as well. So you see, once you Yaitza Mitzvah B'dievet, Nifzak by the Beis Yosef, by the Magen Avram, you can't be Yaitza L'chatchila afterwards. So you see the same Musig by L'chatchila and B'dievet, not just by Hidden Mitzvah and any Hidden Mitzvah. And there are many rayas to this, because my producer's looking at me, he says, you know, you're being myrich too much. I'm not going to go through all the rayas. We will post online at least three or four rayas in each direction. Legabe, if you yaitze mitzvah lechatchila, b'dievet, can you then fix it lechatchila? It's very not clear. And therefore, the question comes back. Why were they misaking it in a way that, according to the Magen Avraham and the Beis Yosef, once you said it, you yaitze b'dievet, and therefore you can't fix it anymore, they should have done it the opposite way around. So my answer to these two questions is, notwithstanding the at least 100 or so responses that we got, is I go back to Reb Nachum's teretz, which is tzarechi, and it certainly adds a rischa deraisa. This week I have a new riddle. Here's a new riddle, and it has to do with Pesach, total Pesach shaila. The Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvahs, Mitzvah Kuf Samach Aleph, says there's two. We count the days and we count the weeks. Mitzvah l'mim niyamei, mitzvah l'mim nishvua. Is it one mitzvah or two mitzvahs? So Rambam says it's one mitzvah, and he brings a raya. What's one of his rayas? He says if it was two mitzvahs, there would be two brachas. And we only make one bracha, al sfiras ayim on both. So obviously, it's only one mitzvah. Rule, one bracha must be one mitzvah. Rambam kuf samach aleph sefer mitzvahs. Problem. The Rambam in the Yad HaChazakah, Perek Dalet of Hilchos Tefillin Halacha Dalet, says that mitzvahs tefillin, it's two mitzvahs. Shal Yad v'shal Reish are two separate mitzvahs, which is why the famous Shagasari, Mishael Yad Pata, is he Pata Menat Tefillin, and there was an Ema'akvis, he says the Ema'akvis, but it's two totally separate mitzvahs. Now, the Sfar, in Ashkenaz, we make two brachas on one, but the Sfaradim only make one. So what does the Rambam and Halacha Hay say? It's two mitzvahs, but you make one bracha, that's Yaitza, both mitzvahs, Laniach Tefillin. Obvious problem. By Sfiris, Aymer and Rambam says, must be one mitzvah counting weeks and counting days. Proof, otherwise it would be two brachas. By tefillin, when a Rambam writes, it's two separate mitzvahs. What does he write? You only make one bracha. Who has a teretz to this kasha? Fantastic. Shaila, I leave it to you. Okay, by the way, I want to mention one other thing, another very interesting thing. This week is something that happens only once, sometimes twice a decade. Three Sifrei Torah, they open one time. And somebody sent me something fabulous that when they when it's 3 weeks, when one of these very rare occasions takes out, and there's a special psicha, they take out three Sfarim, it's a time of Rachmim and Shemayim. They're opening up the gates of heaven. So this week, when they take out the three Sifrei Torah, if there's somebody who's a chayla, somebody who needs a shidduch, somebody who needs parnasa, somebody who just wants to connect and look into the holy gates, it's a special time to do it. And maybe the whole Kriya Satira this week, the Kriya of these three things is something very special. So what I would mention that to those who are listening, maybe before Shabbos or those who listen to Shabbos properly to Kriya Satira. So before we go to gun control, here's a brief introduction to the next three conversations we're going to have so it doesn't come out of the blue. I'll give you a three-minute foundation. The Gemara Tezvavim and Bezen of Eidesara says like this, Ein moichrim lehem loy zayin, we don't sell goyim weapons, the like clay zayin, like a scabbard, the things that help weapons, that house a weapon. Ein mashchizim lehem as a zayin, you don't sharpen a sword, you don't bullets. Ein moichrim lehem, you don't sell them. Sadin, those are shackles, handcuffs. Kalarin is a kala that they put around prisoners. The like kavalim, the like shal shaloy, is chain, shal barzel. You don't do any of this. Why? Because we're worried about Shvichas Damim. So this is the world according to me. Three shitas here in the Rishonim. Rashi shita is because the Maski Lehuli Yisrael, they're going to cause Hezek to Klal Yisrael, Shvichas Damim. And Rashi says two places. Zayin Amar Aleph, he says, U'b'chol Eli Yesh Nezek L'Rabim Shala Yitfas Yisrael. It's a Klal Yisrael centric halacha. You sell them guns, they're going to kill Jews. What does that mean? According to Rashi, if you sell guns, you can sell guns to the Congo, to Malaysia, Indonesia. I don't think there's a minion. I don't even think there's a Chabad in Indonesia. Right? Basically, I would say like this. Where there's no Chabad, according to Rashi, you could sell weapons because there are no Jews there. Right? That's Rashi Shita. So, but it's not a deraisa, it's a drabonin. Tyson says it's because of Lifnei Iver. Rashi doesn't hold of Lifnei Iver because for Lifnei Iver you need something more immediate. When you give a kais yayin lenazir, bingo. You give a Iver Menachai, it's bingo. Here, you sell somebody a gun. Well, maybe he'll use it for defensive purposes. Maybe it'll be in a long time from now. Maybe he'll change his mind. It's just not immediate enough, according to Rashi, to be Lifnei Iver. I'll give you an example. If you have a supermarket, could you sell a pot to a non from a yid, are you going to say you're over Lifnei Iver? Maybe he'll cook in it. Basa b'chalav. The Moshe says it's not immediate enough. It's not direct enough. So again, Rashi, it's a drabanan, selling to a Jew. They're selling to a guy because Liskebu Yisrael, according to Tosis, is the rice of Lifnei Iver. The Rambam has a fascinating pshat, such a different pshat, the 21st century. The Rambam says in the Pirush HaMishnayos, Shaloi Lazer l'mashchisin ba'aretz, not to assist those who do destruction in the world, lahashchis, to destroy, has nothing to do with heathen, has nothing to do with Yisrael. Don't sell landmines. Nothing good is going to come out of selling assault weapons and landmines. When you go hunting a deer, you don't need an assault weapon. That's what the Rambam writes. So the Gemara in Tezayin Amar Aleph says, so today, do we do it? So the Gemara says, no. So the Gemara says, today we do it. Ha'idna, we do sell it. Demignu alayo. They protect us. What does Rashi say? The Migdu Alayu or the Mefarshim say? Because we live in the world and, you know, we have a militia. The American government, the army protects us. So it's not to damage. On the contrary, it's not to Liskubu Yisrael. It's to help Yisrael. It's not according to Rambam. It's not for the Mashchisim Baretz. It's to save the world. According to Tosis, it wouldn't be Lifnei Iver because it's not. So where it's for genuine protective services, it would be allowed. That's what we do it. So according to Nafgamina would be, according to Rashi, you're allowed to sell to protect where it's protecting the Migdu Alai only Klal Yisrael. But according to in Malaysia, you don't have this issue. You would still be allowed Olai Liskub Yisrael. According to the Rambam, any time it would be usher in any situation to sell a gun except it's for a police militia. And outside of Shulchan Aruch, Paskins, like the Rambam, he says you're allowed to sell Legaisais HaMelech, to the king's servants. Why? Because they protect the world. It's for a good purpose. That's in Kuf Nun Aleph. This is the Shulchan Aruch. It seems to Paskin like the Rambam, that you're not allowed to sell Koi Zayin, doesn't mention any place that it has to do Yisrael. Shulchan Aruch seems very clearly pro-gun control. I just read over the Sugya, Shulchan Aruch. Now let's go to our Rabbanim, see what they have to say. We have the honor of having us with us on the phone from New York City, Reb Chaim Steinmetz, who's the Rav of Kehillas Yeshurun in the Upper East Side, the very famous, famous shul. He's a musmach of Rabbi Yitzhak Elchanan. He's a Talmud of the great Reb Moshe Shapiro. Welcome, Reb Steinmetz.
Thank you, Reb David.
Rabbi Steinmetz, in the news recently, there's been this terrible tragedy that happened in Lakeland, Florida, where they killed 17 children, high school boys, including, sad to say, among the many other tragedies, four boys who used to come to Chabad. There's a lot of, really, it wasn't a foreign. It touched the Jewish heart very much. So five of the 17 were from Klal Yisrael. So we want to ask, people asked us, is there any halacha of gun control? Can you sell, you know, it's being debated nationally, can you sell an AR-15 to a 17-year-old boy who shows up in your store with a license? As a Rav, how would you paskin?
So, I mean, it, certainly, as far as halacha is concerned, ideas regarding sakanas nefashos, ideas regarding any danger to life, is very much part and parcel of halacha. The Rambam sees the idea of v'asisa maka legagecha, that you have to put a fence around a roof so that no one should fall off it, as being a general rule regarding safety. And of course, as the Gemara in Chulin says, that's chamira sakanta mi'isura, that when it comes to safety, we're even far more stringent than we would be regarding Isser, regarding questions of other questions of halacha. And so this is, of course, the starting point. When you look at issues like this, you have to wonder, is there a way to sort of reduce the sakana? So even on a general policy level, the first question would be, is there an established method to reduce the loss of life, to reduce this particular danger? And that would be true in terms of highway safety. It would be true in terms of multiple other questions. So that's like where I would start as sort of the foundation. After that, there are, of course, two other very significant analogies, one which comes up in the halacha regarding dogs that are dangerous, which was a debate between the Rama and the Maharshal in the 16th century. And then there's another very significant analogy, which is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which is literally about selling weapons to Ovdei Kochavim, to those who may be the enemies of the Jewish people who would cause harm, or even selling the weapons to Jews who may resell it to people who could cause harm and damage to the community. So those are essentially the three major areas where one would perhaps look to for guidance when it comes to this particular issue.
So let's go back to our question. This killer, I apologize, I don't remember his name. I don't know if I want to know his name. He walks into a store that sells guns, and he wants to buy an AR-15, and he gives you a license. He gives the guy a license, and the guy calls you up, and he says, Rabbi Steinmetz, you know, I make my parnassus selling guns. Can I sell him this AR-15? What would you respond?
So look, if it's established that the person is a danger, so that's already, like I said, that's the Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Daf Tesvav Amid Beis, that you know, you're not allowed to sell Ein Mochel L'Avdei Kochavim. You're not allowed to the Gemara's Lush, and I have it open, is Ein Mochel Lahem Lo Zayin V'Lo Kli Zayin. You're not allowed to sell them any sort of weapons. I mean, certainly a person who you would consider to be dangerous and violent, you are not allowed to sell them a weapon. It's open and shut. There's no question about that. That there's zero question. And all of the questions regarding gun control is, how does one properly vet And how does one decide who could be a danger? In other words, do you say, well, anyone under 21 is generally more dangerous and may cause more difficulty? So do you restrict anyone from under 21 getting a weapon? Do you say certain types of weapons are perhaps only useful in mass murder and have really very little other practical usages for people who have guns? I mean, there are people who have guns for practical reasons. If you live out in an area that's rather remote, you'll need a gun for protection. You may need a gun to kill animals that are coming at your house. But obviously an assault weapon, its very primary purpose is to assault others. So you may say these are areas that when you're looking at this particular halacha, you say to yourself, well, certainly it's an analogy to this idea that, you don't sell weapons to people who are dangerous. That, I think, has to go without a question. And the system where anybody can sell a weapon to anyone, that would certainly go against a very basic halacha in the Gemara. That, I would say, is not even a question. To have a system of open weapon sales without any sort of vetting, without any, you know, the question is, of course, how extreme does the vetting have to be? But the idea even of assault weapons being sold to people who have really no need, they're not going to war, that itself may also be immediately a red flag, that's something that can be misused and be dangerous. I mean, and that really goes more to the analogy of the halacha regarding dogs. I mean, the Rambam, and it's interesting that the halachas regarding dogs, which are found both in the Shulchan Aruch. I mean, it's in Chosh and Mishpat. I'm looking now. It's in Tough Tests. So the Shulchan Aruch talks about the idea of a dog being a danger. I mean, the Rambam seems to imply that there is this idea of, I mean, based on the Gemara, that there's arur megadol klavim, that the dogs are a danger, and someone who raises them should be sanctioned for raising them. So when the Shulchan Aruch talks about this, it talks about whether you have a bad dog, a dog that could be dangerous. Now, obviously, a dog is clearly different than a gun, because a dog acts on its own. It doesn't. A gun can only be used by a person. So, with a gun, you're dealing with who do I sell a gun to? With a dog, it's a question of do I have this thing that itself could be very, very dangerous, and how do I control it? Do I let it off leash? So there ends up becoming a big machlokes between the Rama and the Maharshal. The Rama, you know, says that there's essentially an exception made already in the Gemara and then in the Shulchan Aruch for a dog that's in an area that's dangerous, iras mucha lasafar, a dog in an area that's dangerous, that you're allowed to let the dog off leash at night and tie it up during the day because you need the dog to protect your property. Who knows who's going to be coming across the border and attacking your house? So the Rama says a very interesting thing. The Rama says that now that we live amongst the nations, and presumably there's a danger of being attacked just as a Jew, he says, Bechol inyan shari. He says it's allowed in any, no matter what. And then he says, Upok chazi mai amad bar, go look what people do. So the Rama, seemingly Jews had dogs in Krakow in the middle 1500s, and they would keep the dogs for protection. And the Rama says you can keep the dog off leash because you need the dog for protection. Now, the Maharshal takes a very, very different point of view. They're cousins, they're contemporaries, or the Marshal's 10 years older, but they're contemporaries. And the Marshal over in Lublin, the Ramaz in Krakow, the Marshal says that he completely is against the idea of having dogs. Maybe you could have small dogs that are used as pets, but to have a dangerous dog, he says he can't understand it, how you could keep it off leash, and that it's an absolute hazard. So one of the other issues in halacha that comes up is having a dangerous animal in your house and how do you properly control it? And do, if you need it for protection, maybe you need to be more liberal. And then the Marshal comes to the Raman and says, no, you can't be liberal. This is a dangerous thing to have around. You can't let it hurt people. And I would say in this particular back and forth, although obviously it's not a perfect analogy, but you get the sense of both points of view. It, on the one side, a dangerous dog is important for protection. On the other side, the dangerous dog can end up hurting the very people it's supposed to protect. So how tied up does the dog have to be? How careful do you have to be? This is really, in many ways, the shaklavatarya between the Rama and the Marshal.
That's a fabulous analogy, but I would just let me then query you that in the Shulchan Aruch, when it talks about it, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah in Tezvav, or I think it's in Hilchos Akum in Yeridei around Kufrun Ches, when it brings the din of Klei Zayin, you don't have the Marshal and the Rama arguing over there. And it seems to be unanimous.
No, that, because there it's clear. That's no question. In other words, there's two things. Do you give the gun to someone else that's dangerous? That's number one. Number two is, even for people who are good, how many guns should you have around? What if someone, you know, what if a kid picks up a gun? What if you're in a house and there's five guns and there's a teenager who's maybe not that stable? In other words, there's a whole other, in other words, there's different layers. One is who do you sell it to? Then the other one is that if you have 75 guns in your house, or if you're not necessarily very careful with them, or if we don't lock them up, or if we don't put in, they have now the guns that are smart guns that will only work with one particular person's palm. Do we have to insist on smart guns? In other words, when you have a kelav ra, so to speak, when you have something that can end up actually backfiring and hurting you, to what extent do you need to control it, or to what extent do you say, no, look, I can't control it too much because I want it to protect myself from outside threats? That would really be my, in other words, I think that this analogy and this shaklavatarya is really a shaklavatarya about, okay, to what extent do we score outside threats as something very significant, and what extent do we say, well, it's very nice that this particular hazardous thing, whether it be a wild dog or a gun, is important for outside threats, but don't forget, it's really important for inside threats. And you know, you may at some point do the statistics and say, you know what, whether it be, I mean, and by the way, when we talk about gun violence, the largest element within gun violence is, of course, suicides, where guns are available to people who unfortunately are chole nefesh, and they can end up killing themselves, and that's really the great issue. In other words, like, okay, we're protecting ourselves against outside threats, and there's always anecdotal cases of this is an outside threat and that's an outside threat, and look what happens. And if more people had guns, we could have stopped the mass shooter. Mitzad Sheni, and like I said, this is the interesting shaklavatarya. Okay, you need to score what the outside threats are, you know, what their risks are. You need to also score what the inside threat risks are. And how do you weigh one against the other? That, I think, is really what I think that when you look at the Maharshal and the Rama, that's an idea that comes to the forefront and would require someone who would be putting together a policy on this issue to really think about both sides of it.
Now, Rabbi, I think that's a fabulous point. It's just a beautiful homiletic. You're making it such a practical machlokes. Let me ask you, like, suggest another thought, not on a dissimilar line. On this halacha of Mechrim Klei Zayin, it would seem that there's a machlokes in the Rishonim as to what the reason is. That the Lashon of the Rambam is, both in the Pirush HaMishnayos and in the Yad, he says, because there's Nezek L'Rabim. We don't want to bring a mashchis to the world. We don't want to create public destruction, public damage. And yet in other Rishayim, and the Rambam actually cites for himself someplace else in the Yad HaZakah, he says it's because of lifnei iver, because you're actually causing the individual who buys the gun, you're allowing him to be destructive, and that's bad for the person himself. And it seems almost like two reasons not to sell somebody a gun. the public good, and what about yourself? We're turning you possibly into a monster, and we don't want to do that to you.
Well, I mean, I think it certainly would apply to two different cases. In other words, if I sell guns to someone on a different continent who is going to use them for murder, that's the Isser of Lifnei Iver. If I sell guns to the guy down the street who's going to use them for murder, then that's Nezek L'Rabim. In other words, Nezek for my Rabim. In other words, I think Nezek L'Rabim is looking at it from a local picture. In other words, Nezek L'Rabim, what's going to happen to this community? So it certainly has two sides to it, and there's no question, in other words, if it's going to be misused. And, you know, it's interesting you're mentioning the Rambam. I don't have it open in front of me. I'm looking at it right now. But clearly, different cases would be affected by those two ideas. In other words, there are cases where the person may not attack you. I mean, that's one of the main issues in the Gemara: are they going to attack the Jewish community, or are they working in tandem with the Jewish community? But even if they're not going to attack the Jewish community, there may be a separate issue of Lifnei Iver, that the guns will be used for murder. I mean, if you're selling, I mean, this has always been an issue. I mean, it remains an issue today. I mean, I don't know if you follow the Israeli newspapers. There is a bit of a protest in that the Israeli government does sell arms to the government of Myanmar, which is currently involved in a conflict with the Rohingya. And there are many who feel that that's deeply inappropriate. So there is certainly an element of Lifnei Iver, even if it has it may actually be in the interest of your community to engage in these arms sales. But on the flip side, you do have a moral responsibility not to aid and abet those who are committing an avera.
Let's talk about the second point you're bringing up, which is Israeli selling arms. Israel is one of the larger arms, as a country. They have many arms dealers in the country. They do sell, I think it's number 6 or 7 in the world in arms dealing. Now, given that the Shulchan Aruch paskins that it's Asa Limker Kloy Zayin Lagai, how do we, as Jews, look at that and say, I mean, not necessarily that they're acting in accordance of the Shulchan Aruch, but if you were a Rav in Eretz Yisrael and the Elbit systems came to you and they said, we just got an order from Venezuela or China or some,
Well, look, in those days, it's certainly South Africa. Israel did sell guns. I mean, look, perhaps, Lifnei Iver is a lav. Let's put it this way. You always want to be on the moral high ground. I wouldn't want to say anything further, not in private, not in public, than wanting to be on the moral high ground. I would just mention as a mitigating factor, not that I'm saying that this to my mind legitimizes any of these sales, whether they be past, present, or future, any sale that may have a moral taint. I would just mention that Israel has always felt very beleaguered and felt that literally each and every day it's struggling for its survival. I mean, now the Iranian threat is one that is very frightening. It has always been surrounded by its enemies. And sometimes the feeling is that when everybody, you're surrounded by enemies, you need to take any friend you can get. So, these are difficult situations to judge, and certainly to judge sitting in an armchair in the middle of Manhattan. But clearly, the best policy is to avoid any moral taint. And I would agree with those who are protesting the sales to Myanmar. On the flip side, I certainly understand those who feel that you need to be pragmatic, and that a country with very few friends can't alienate the couple of friends that they may have.
So, whereas you're saying as far as Lifnei Iver, right? I mean, just talking practically, it's a shaila.
I mean, if you want to talk halachic terminology, lufnei iver certainly gets pushed aside before sukkah
sefash. Also, I would it's very possible that it's not lufnei iver here because it's not treyver dinara. And there are weapons, maybe not the exact weapons, but
right,
similar weapons.
Right, it's not
weapons.
Treyver dinara. Yeah, right. I mean, getting into the whole, right, yeah. You would get into the whole sugya lufnei iver. There would be multiple ways out, probably.
But on the other hand, the question of where the Rambam put it says you're creating a mashchis or a public hazard, which is interesting, sort of a new theory. He says we cannot create, you know, something public dangers. So the question is, so that seems to be, I guess.
Well, I mean, because it redounds at you. If you toss guns out into the street, you may end up getting killed. You know, it's like the Gemara in Bava Kamma, where the old man tells the person throwing the stones from his field into the street, why are you throwing from what's not yours into what's yours? And
right.
He says, what are you, crazy? Because Rosh Hashanah, he loses his field, and he's a poor man, and he's walking in the street, and he trips over the stone that he threw in. The Rosh Hashanah is ultimately, that's you. If you throw guns into the Rosh Hashanah, it's gonna endanger you. That's really the fundamental issue. And like I said, it's not a simple issue. I mean, on a policy level, people sit and they discuss it, and it's not just because there's, you know, political stubbornness. There really is a lot to be talked about statistically. I mean, statistically, those who've analyzed this, I mean, swimming pool safety is a more statistically significant issue than gun safety in the United States. In other words, there are more deaths related to swimming pools. So there is. I mean, this whole idea of worrying about sakana, I mean, clearly doesn't diminish the need to think about sakana regarding guns. But in other words, one needs to sort of think about the policy issues with a clear background. But that being said, I mean, it's a no-brainer to restrict the sales to, first of all, to make sure that every sale is seriously licensed and is done after an extensive waiting period, and that you can't sell more than one gun to a person, let's say every 6 months or whatever it may be. How many guns does a person need? Those are things, in other words, because if a person's buying 30 guns at a time, clearly he's not buying them just for his own use. So there are very clear regulations that can and should be adopted. But that being said, obviously, it really needs to be done. You know, there needs to be a serious study of it. I mean, you know, the Center for Disease Control wants to do a study. It needs to be studied by people who are you know, thinking about it, you know, from a statistical point of view, from a rational point of view, rather than sort of just, you know, throwing rhetoric out into the street.
So, in conclusion, Rabbi Steinman, would it be fair to say that the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch are firmly come down on the side of gun control?
Right? Absolutely.
And we're seeing multiple reasons, both because, like you say, you could end up getting hurt, or additionally, maybe lifnei iver, the person may end up hurting somebody in the family, or there could be some type of suicide attempt in the family. And
right.
You need a reason, an active reason, to go against the Shulchan Aruch. There would be some abiding. You would have to why. The question has to be, why do you need a gun? Explain that to me to get the gun, not why don't you need a gun.
Right, and it would be like that Raman Choshen Mishpat. In other words, maybe I'm in an Ir Shekarav LaSafar, or even Krakow, now that you live amongst the Umos HaOlam and there are dangers, so then I need to have an attack dog running around my yard all day. Obviously there will be mitigating.
Yeah.
Right, but again, the Marshal says, who ever heard of such a thing? The Marshal says you can have a poodle, you can't have a German Shepherd. You know, that's essentially the Marshal's response. Whoever heard of such a thing?
So let me go off topic for a minute. Given that, you know, it seemed that in the 1500s at least, Jews did have dogs. Why has that changed, and why have dogs sort of become an anathema? I mean, if you would go to Yerushalayim or Bnei Brak, you know, go try to find a dog. Right?
So
why do you think that's changed?
So, first of all, I mean, in terms of the history, you know, there is, so to speak, a history between Jews and dogs. Don't forget, I mean, you have the idea of Mechir Kelev in the Torah. And the Ramban right there says that the reason why there's you can't bring Mechir Kelev as a gift in the Beis HaMikdash is because dogs are hunters and they're animals that are aggressive, and something that gets sold for a dog, that money should not be used to bring a carbon. That there's a sense that the dogs have a negative character. I think that Jews have negative associations with dogs because dogs were very often owned by their enemies. And you know, there are other halachic issues, whether even with a house pet, whether a house pet is considered muksa or not. Those are halachic issues. I mean, I see this Ramah Marshal as the interesting thing about the Ramah is the Ramah seems to indicate that Jews own dogs. My late mother, who was a Holocaust survivor, who came from a town near Klosenberg, so they had dogs because they had a large yard and they had a large property and they had to have dogs for protection. So it does seem that Jews had more dogs than we imagine. At the same time, there was a great hesitation. I mean, dogs were probably used to attack them. Going back to the Torah, you have the idea of Mechir Kelev. The Rambam's very negative attitude towards dogs, you know, when he says Arer Megabel Klavim, you know, don't forget in you know where the Rambam lived. Also, dogs were an animal that no one had. It was considered to be an animal of brutes and marginal figures. So all of that may have affected a Jewish connection to dogs. That may be part of it. I mean, even though the Torah says L'kelev tashlechenu when it comes to the Nevela, but there is this sort of negative sense of maybe dogs were used by anti-Semites against them, or maybe dogs only belong to marginal figures in society. So why would a Jew want to own something that's an aggressive animal that's not owned by people of refinement?
Well, Rabbi Steinmetz, thank you very much for laying out so clearly gun control in halacha.
Thank you very much, Rabbi David.
We have the honor of having with us on the phone from Teaneck, New Jersey, Rabbi Pruzansky, who's the Rav of B'nai Yeshurun. He's also the senior Rav of the Coalition of Jewish Values. Welcome, Rabbi Pruzansky.
Thank you very much, David.
So, Rabbi Pruzansky, recently in Florida was, there was 17 children shot at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High and by a Smith & Wesson manufactured gun, an AR-15. And if somebody were to ask you halachically, you know, Parnassus is a little difficult these days, you know, I would like to buy a gun shop and sell, and I'm going to listen to the laws, I'm only going to sell to people who fill out the questionnaire, who provide their license, who say they're over 18, they don't have mental health issues, Dina de Malchusadina, etc. Can I buy the store? It's for sale. How would you respond as a Rav?
Well, the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah that we're not in Mochum Lohim Lo Zayin Lo Klei Zayin. We don't sell to Ovd Avodah Zarah any type of weaponry. As a general rule, of course, it applies to Jews selling, not non-Jews selling. They're allowed to own. But you see, even the Gemara on Amud Beis, there has an exception. Rav Ashi said that Jews in Persia sold to the Persians the Meganu Ilavon. They protected them. So when there is an interest in self-defense, and that would be the primary interest for a Jew in owning a weapon, then, of course, it would be mutter. You need restrictions, you need appropriate controls to make sure guns don't fall into the hands of the wrong people, but nonetheless, in essence, it would be mutter. That's not to say it's necessarily a type of endeavor that is naturally attractive to a Jew, but nonetheless, on those grounds, it would be mutter as long as there are the safeguards that it does not fall into the hands of people who could harm us or others.
I would possibly disagree with that conclusion, because let me read the Lashon of the Shulchan Aruch. Ho Yisrael shaychdem ben ovdei kechavim v'karsul hambris mutter limkar klezayin, you can sell weapons, la'avdei hamelech the Geisosov, to the servants of the king and his army and his you know, immediate cohorts, you know, it's his generals, etc. Neisha'oisin Mulchama im Tsarei Hamadina, because they do war with the enemies of the nation, Lahatsila. V'nimtzu Maginim Aleim, therefore they are protecting them. So my question is, would you say that selling to the U.S. Army would clearly be selling to the Geisei HaMelech, Shem Naginim Aleim, right? The Tsarei HaMelech, the Samad Achrayim say, or the Rishayim, the army of the Melech, would you say selling to a 22-year-old Mr. Jones who wants to have a gun collection, would you say that that has a din of Avdei HaMelech V'Geisosav, She'osim Mulchama Im Tsarei HaMedina?
Well, not necessarily. I would say that you're talking about societies in which the obligation of defense devolved upon the king and the officers of the king. But in America, the right of self-defense devolves upon every citizen. Remember, this country began with citizen militias rising up against the British. And that, in fact, caused the Second Amendment to be enshrined in the Bill of Rights because of the foundational circumstances of the United States. So the right of self-defense is not one that's given only over to Geisos, to army or police, but in fact it's the right of every citizen to defend himself. So in a technical sense, I think you're correct, that ideally it should be only in the hands of the Melech or the Geisos of Melech. But consider that even the Chaber, I think Gemara mentioned this as well, we've shown him too, they're talking about situations where the monarch was an absolute ruler and brooked no possession of weapons by private citizens in order to ensure his control over the kingdom. So I'm not sure it's necessarily applicable to today. But nonetheless, ideally, if we lived in a perfect world, like the Gemara says, in Shabbos, talking about carrying weapons on Shabbos, b'teilin l'masa Mashiach l'vishen atzrichin. You're not gonna, we won't need it in your masa Mashiach. But it's a different world today, and I think especially in a society where crime, although it's diminished, nonetheless still exists. People need to have the right to defend themselves as well, and that is part of the American ethos.
Wait, so but Rabbi Przanski, I think it's fair to say that the concept of self-defense is not a 21st century concept. I mean, the concept of self-defense, Habalah Hargech, is a Talmudic concept that goes back a few thousand years. Notwithstanding the concept of you should protect your home, the home is a person's castle. We see from the halacha of Baba Machteris that a person is allowed to protect their phone, even an Avala Ben, and kill the other person. The Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara still say it refers to an army that's against the Lochamei Alair. So it would seem that having weapons for self-defense, either for crime or for, you know, other marauding forces, the Gemara rejects. Notwithstanding that they lived in a more dangerous society, I think most people would agree that medieval times certainly were far more dangerous. The world as a whole is a much safer place. So if in a much more dangerous world the concept of self-defense was illegal and you could not sell weapons for this reason, in a much safer world, wouldn't it be kal v'chomer that we should not be allowed to for self-defense? And as far as the question of the Second Amendment, the Second Amendment is an invention of the founders, right? But could you think of somebody? There are 100,000 shootings a year in the United States, 30,000 plus which end up in death. Can you think of the last time that somebody shot somebody because there was a marauding force that we were trying to protect? I really asked you two different questions.
Right. So let me just answer the second first, and then you can repeat the first. The NRA publishes a monthly magazine called Rifleman. One of the columns they have every month is something entitled The Armed Citizen. And every month they just relate 10 to 15 cases drawn from local media across the country, which people defended themselves or their homes against invasion of intruders through the use of weapon. Rarely are the weapons discharged. Usually just the display of a weapon is enough to convince the intruder to leave. But, you know...
But is that a new thing? Rabbi Przanski, is that a new...
No, not
people
at all.
People have been invading homes for 2,000 years, and the Gemara still said, Ein Mochrin Lahem Klei Zayin, notwithstanding that.
So we have to get back to your first case. We have a Baba Machteres, all right? A person is allowed to defend his home because we know the intruder is coming, the burglar is coming, al iskei nefashos, vabola hargacha hashkemel hargo. So the world is a safer place, but the weapons are deadlier. And therefore you can't say habala hargacha hashkemel hargo, a person should have to use his hands against a person entering with a knife or a gun. Keep in mind, 89% of the gun violence in America is perpetrated with illegal weapons, not legal weapons. Over 300 million legal weapons in America, and very, very few of them are used in the commission of crimes. Very few of them.
Rabbi Brzezinski, in the old, let's go back to the olden times. Your name is, I don't know, your name is Beryl, and you live in your house in Pumpadisa, and you're a rabbi local, and a guy comes in with a sword and a spear. I mean, to your average homeowner, a guy carrying a machete is just as terrifying, not just, but certainly very terrifying, maybe not as much as an AR-15, and yet the halach is ein moicher lahem kli zayin. So I think we need, what has changed? People have always had a right to defend their homes, and the halach is, Chazal said, no, don't sell weapons. People get more hurt by weapons than get defended by weapons. So in society, it should be kal v'chaymer.
Well, the argument is somewhat moot because the issue is not Jews selling weapons to non-Jews. The Jews are barely involved in the sale of weapons. There are Jews who sell weapons in America, but it's minuscule. Most of the sales of weapons in America are not non-Jews to non-Jews. The argument is somewhat moot. There's no ban. You see, in the Gemara and Shabbos, there's no ban on carrying weapons, nor ban on selling weapons to people who need them, who would use them. So you go back to Pumpadisa, why not go back to, I just spoke the other night by Ramosha Feinstein, when he came to Lubavitch in 1920-21, there was a pogrom in Lubavitch that Baruch Hashem, he was able to survive. Imagine Jews who were enduring pogroms with Cossacks across Eastern Europe. Imagine if they had weapons to defend themselves. Don't you think they'd be in a different situation?
Bear in mind, I don't think that's the Shulchan Aruch says you can sell clay Zion to a Jew. It says you cannot sell.
One second. The Shulchan does not bar non-Jews from selling weapons to non-Jews. You're asking if a Jew should be mocher or clay Zion? That's a different question.
That's my question. My question is, could this guy own a gun shop? That's my question.
I don't see why not, but he has to be certain to. Well, let me take from this perspective. Most of the people buy guns in America are using them for, among other things, hunting, all right? Hunting is, it's Esav's sport. It's not a Jewish sport. Would a Jew be over lifnei iver, which applies to non-Jews as well, if he sells a rifle to a Jew, to a non-Jew who's going to go hunting? It could be. It could be. So I'm not saying it's necessarily an enterprise that Jews should be involved with, but Lemaisa, Jews are not involved with it. But I couldn't say that it's at the heart of the debate here, nor would I say that it would be also for a Jew to engage in a legal enterprise as long as he's not selling to people who have a propensity for violence and could unduly harm innocent people in society.
Yeah, but Rabbi Brzezinski, when the Shulchan Aruch or the Gemara say, "Ein moicher lahem kli zayin," it doesn't mean that they have a propensity for violence. But
no,
that's like
exactly what the Gemara means.
But it means, it could
us.
Be, well, that's according to Rashi. Rashi says they could use it against
okay.
us. But there
right.
are many Mefarshim, the Rambam, and a number of others that say, because we are bringing, which is how the Shulchan Aruch paskins, not like Rashi, that because you're bringing the Lashon HaRambam is Shalei Lazer L'mashchisin Ba'olam L'hashchis. It's a very cosmic type of a thing. He says, if you're selling landmines, it's not for a good thing. If you're selling assault weapons, you're just adding evil. You're bringing hashchasa to the world. I mean, there are 100,000 shootings a year in the United States. More people have been killed in the United States by gun deaths than in all the wars since its inception, including the Civil War. This is from my Rebbe called Wikipedia. From the including the Civil War, World War II, and Vietnam, more people have been killed. So the Washington Rambam is, you were bringing hashchasa to the world. And so my question is, as a Jew, should we be manufacturing or selling? Should we own Smith & Wesson? Should we own a gun shop or not?
If the primary purpose was hashchasa, I would say, of course not. But the primary purpose is not hashchasa, and that I don't see it as unreasonable that a Jew should be able to possess weapons, and of course with appropriate safeguards, even to sell them. But keep in mind, the statistics are very tricky. Last year in America, there were about 11, 12,000 homicides, all right? So you speak of gun deaths, a lot of suicide and a minuscule number are accidental. There are twice as many suicides as homicides. Of the homicides, most are committed with illegal guns. It's not an issue of selling them. But there are 11, 12,000 homicides. But there are 35,000 deaths by vehicular accident. 60,000 people in America died from a drug overdose last year. 100,000 people died from infections they got in hospitals. So we have to be realistic in evaluating the danger, separate fact from emotion, and realize that the types of events, the horrific events that took place in Florida last month, are aberrations. And what we have to do is find ways to preclude those aberrations from occurring. Granted, we're not living in a perfect world.
Well, Rabbi Pruszynski, let me respond to that. You know, should we ban vehicles because there were, I don't remember how many deaths, but certainly everybody knows somebody who died in a vehicle.
35,000 a year. And by
the
way,
and all of us know somebody who died in a car.
Rav Kook said we should ban vehicles.
Okay,
it's
so
the most instrument in society.
So let me ask, Rabbi Pruszynski, yeah. More people die of obesity today and obesity-related foods in the United States, right?
Right.
On the other hand, things like heroin, you know, we hear, yes, there is a small percentage of people who die. So the question is, why do we scream so, you know, vigilantly against heroin? Why don't we ask for food and be mad to heroin? Because heroin just kills a few people, but overeating, you know, heart disease and diabetes, and I think most people would tell you it's the same thing as alcohol, because food can be used safely. Alcohol can be, wine can be used safely. And for the grace part, most people make wine. They use it for kiddush, havdalah, they'll have a few drinks. Whereas an assault weapon, there's really no reasonable person to person. And even guns, for the most part, you know, as a percentage of guns sold, a lot more people die from guns and heroin than they do from cheesecake, notwithstanding the fact that cheesecake
right.
can be used.
Which is why the
Lashon HaRambam is, this is landmines. There are much fewer landmines in the world than there are cheesecakes. So why are we making such a tumult when we say outlaw landmines? Why not allergies? Because this is something that, used correctly, it's good. Whereas landmines, for the most part, are there only for one reason, to kill. So to compare guns to vehicles or hospital deaths, well, yes, sick people go to hospitals, bad things happen in hospitals, but hospitals are for the better. Whereas most people would say, we have policemen, why do you need a Glock?
Okay, I'll explain. I think the difference between the examples you mentioned about obesity, alcohol, etc., is they cause a gradual death, and you can't pinpoint any particular event that causes the death. It's not a sudden death that results. It's something that happens over time. But it's not true with the others that I mentioned, whether it's cars or drugs or hospital infections. They take place pretty quickly. Now, you're right. The police exist, and we respect the police. But the police investigate crimes. They don't prevent crimes. There's an expression that floats about in America that when seconds matter, the police are there in minutes. And it's true. When you're the subject of a home intrusion, or for that matter, Chaman al-Tzlan, if a shul yeshiva are invaded by the enemy, by the time the police come, the damage has been done. Look at the Florida, the Parkland shooting. The police came and refused to enter the building for reasons that remain inexplicable. So I would be loath to live in a society whereby you had to rely on the police to defend you. The police try to protect, and the police certainly investigate, but there are not enough police officers in the land that could prevent crimes from happening, especially when there are people with evil intent that proliferate. Keep in mind something else. Per capita, more children, Malcolm Gladwell wrote this a few years ago, swimming pools kill more children per capita than guns. It's more dangerous for a child to be around a swimming pool than to be around a gun. Think about it. So many more guns and so fewer swimming pools, but almost 400 kids die every year of drowning in a swimming pool. So based on the availability of both items, swimming pools are more dangerous. It's strange. It's just paradoxical.
Well, I made the same point about cheesecake. I think a lot more people die of cheesecake than guns.
But it's gradual.
I think most people would say that a gun is meant to kill and a cheesecake is not meant to kill. A swimming pool is meant to swim in. It's not meant to die in. Whereas a gun is created for one person, for one reason.
For one purpose.
To kill.
Right.
To kill.
Well, not necessarily. I disagree. A gun is meant to defend.
Well,
and again,
but defend would mean to kill also, to kill, right?
Well, yes. You know, you mentioned assault weapons. You should know that's really a descriptive term. It's not a technical term. An assault weapon, like people have been saying the last few weeks, is any gun that looks scary. But you take the AR-15 that was used in one of the weapons used in Parkland, which is a semi-automatic weapon. Not that I'm such a big bucky in these things, but I only read up on it. People don't know. Who do you think are the largest purchasers of AR-15s in America? And the answer is women. Women buy them because a woman who's attacked in her home by a male intruder will not be able to fend them off necessarily with a handgun. So most AR-15s are sold to women for that purpose.
So let me just come back to my question, and then why does the Shulchan Aruch say you're not allowed to sell a Klei Zayin to an Akum and only to the militia?
But the Shulchan Aruch didn't ban non-Jews from selling it.
No, but I'm asking you for
again,
a Jew. I want to stick to it for a Jew.
Right. Yes, I'll tell you again, in a society where the protection of the average citizen is dependent on the government, and guns are barred from, or weapons are barred from the average citizen, you can understand why there's a limitation placed that you want only malchios that are civilized and people that are civilized to own them. Remember, the original Isser was on Ovd Avodah Zarah, on savages, on pagans, who will not be able to, who have no sense of propriety or moral sensibility. We're talking about a different realm altogether. If you want to rely on the Melech and the Geisos, that's fine. I understand why a Jew should be careful not to sell to any of them. But I only wish that 75, 100, 200 years ago, Jews did possess weapons by which they could have defended themselves. And I don't think the Shulchan Aruch would have opposed that.
No. We're talking just selling weapons to... So in other words, basically, your position is that today you can sell weapons to a guy.
There's nothing absolute. You have to be careful not to sell to a person who is not does not present as normal, seems to have evil intent. You should check the background of everyone. I think most people, I don't speak for the NRA, but even the NRA favors sensible controls over to whom weapons are sold. I mean, that's basic seichel. But I don't think it would be just, fair, or prudent to deprive innocent people, to penalize the law-abiding because a small handful of people are criminals. That would make no sense. Just like even though there are 35,000 people killed in America every year through vehicular accidents, we don't then, like Rav Kook suggested, not have cars because there's a purpose. If you only look at the purpose of a gun as killing people, then you're correct. But I think the purpose of a gun, and most gun use in America, is not for that purpose. Most is actually recreational. People go for target practice. But the functional aspect of it is to protect oneself and one's home. And that's rooted in the American tradition. Of course, you need reasonable safeguards as well.
All right, Przinsky, thank you very much. It's an honor to have you, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
We have on the phone with us Harav Arye Leibowitz. He's the Mara D'Asra of Beis HaKnesses of North Woodmere. He's a Rebbe in the Beis Medrash of Talmud. He's also, I think, on YU Torah, the most prolific Magid Shia that they have in the entire system. Welcome, Rabbi Leibowitz.
Thank you very much. Good to talk to you again.
So, Rav Leibowitz, everybody's aware of the, you know, the shooting that happened in the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School of a teenager with an AR-15 gun. He killed, you know, 17 children, including among them four or five boys who used to go, or children who used to go to Chabad, is what Chabad said. So I want to talk about gun control from a halachic point of view. If you have, somebody would come to you and you say, you know, Rabbi Leibowitz, I just have the opportunity to buy a gun shop, and I'm going to do things legally. I'm going to check the licenses. I'm going to make sure that they have no mental health issues. I'm going to call up everything. Dina de Malchusa, Mamish mit Alehi Durim. Am I allowed to buy it for a Parnassa? How would you respond?
It's a very difficult shaila. The Gemara does talk about who you can and cannot sell guns to, and it's not abundantly clear that the laws in the country as they are now meet the standard that the Gemara has for who you are and are not allowed to sell a gun to. The Gemara is a sugya of Avodah Zarah. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, many years ago, Rabbi Bleich wrote an open letter, a public letter to the fellow who owned the gun shop that sold the gun to the guy who shot President Reagan. I think it was a Jewish fellow, and I think he was fairly critical of this fellow for selling guns. And so one has to be very, very careful with that kind of profession.
So how would you respond to this fellow? Can he or can he own a gun shop?
I would say that there are better ways for a nice Jewish boy to make a living. I don't think there's iser to own a gun shop, but given, I don't know, I'm not familiar enough with the laws, with whether one is required to sell a gun to anyone who meets the legal standard. But if you are, then I would imagine that that's fraught with halachic problems. Again, I'm not a major posek. I'm just someone who, you know, pretty low-level rabbi. But I would think that that's a problem that he should discuss with poskim, and I would bet that he's going to run into problems.
So is there anybody he could sell a gun to?
Yeah, certainly there's no iser in the Torah that I'm aware of, at least, of owning a gun or owning a weapon. You know, the Gemara talks about not being megadol a kelev rab, but a kelev is hard to control. You can't really lock it up. You have to feed it. You have to let it out at some times. So I don't think a gun is really the equivalent of a kelev. You know, the Gemara talks about, the idea that in an ideal world, in the end of days, that the Navi talks about, that lo yisag gayel gay cherev, that in an ideal world, we're not going to have weapons anymore. But nowadays, we do have weapons, and it's understood that we have weapons. In Shulchan Aruch, we talk about how one is allowed to have weapons nowadays, especially if it's for self-protection.
But the Gemara that you references says a meichrin klei zayin to an akum. I mean, certainly he's going to have to sell it to a guy.
Right. So again, the gun shop issue. Well, there are exceptions to that. Certainly, the Gemara itself talks about if it's for a security force that's going to help protect you, then that's permissible.
So would you say, Rabbi Leibowitz, that look, we don't think that the U.S. military is buying from these gun shops?
Certainly not.
So let me ask you, given that the Shulchan Aruch nems on that you should not be selling guns to Goyim, right? Because that's what Rashi says, and given the fact that it seems the Shulchan Aruch, the Gemara wrote this 1,500 years ago or so, 1,700 years ago, and in the United States today, they say 33,000 people died last year from gunshots, so it seems to still be pretty relevant, the concept that it'll bring hashchasa to the world. Would you say it's a problem the Israeli government or Israel has a big business in selling, you know, armaments, an entire armamentarium to other governments? Now, wouldn't that, and so the heter that you said is that if the nimtza maginim alayu, if they're going to protect you, but amar avashi leparsoi de magnu iluyin, but when they sell to Bolivia or to Congo or to any one of these third world countries, etc., They're certainly not protecting, you know, there's very few, if any, Yidden over there. Would you say that that's problematic? I mean, and that the Israeli government, you know, you would tell you shouldn't be doing this?
I can't pretend to know the cheshbonos involved on a national level when governments interact with each other. But I would imagine that when governments deal with military trades and things of that nature, that there are other national security types of considerations coming in the other direction. I don't know. I can't speak specifically, obviously. But without knowing, I certainly can't comment on that. But I don't think it's a black and white issue to trade arms. Let's say if Israel develops some technology that they share with the United States, and the United States will fund that technology to be used in Israel, as far as military, abilities, I think that would, on a national level, that would probably be mutter. But you really have to be familiar with the details to comment on that.
Okay, now, given that there's an issue to sell guns, right, absent on whatever, then maybe on a national level, would you say that there's a problem? And let's say, I was actually offered at one time to take a position in Smith & Wesson, and notwithstanding, I didn't have an interest in it, but I said, I don't know if you're allowed to own a piece of Smith & Wesson, because you would be over the issur of, En Merchalem Klei Zayin. Would you see that there's an issue of owning stock in a company like that?
There's a broader issue about owning stock in general in companies that do businesses that are forbidden. This would have to be dealt with by serious poskim, but I would be hesitant to really get involved in anything to do with selling guns, the production of guns, not necessarily owning guns. Owning guns may be, as long as it's legal in this country and a person feels that they need it for their protection. If security force is needed or if the people are well trained to secure shuls and schools and the like, I would not have a problem with it. In fact, I don't have a problem with it. There are people in many shuls in our community that go through training and carry a concealed weapon, and I don't have a problem with that. But selling guns and owning a gun company, I'd be much more nervous about things like that.
So let me follow this up with a question, and it's also a broader question. There was a gun runner in Mexico, an Orthodox Jew, who was known to sell weapons to foreign governments. And he was also a very philanthropic person, and he donated buildings, one to, one a famous yeshiva here in New York, a famous Hasidus in New York has his name emblazoned on their building, and he was basically, he sold weapons for a living. He sold, my question is, would you have a problem if he came to your shul, the basic Knesset of Woodman, and said, you would know he's a gun runner, and he wants to donate the wing to the building. Do you see an issue with that?
This, again, like you said, is part of a broader issue of Jewish most of taking money from people who earn that money in ways that are problematic. Now, if he's mamish, as you describe, I don't know who you're referring to, so I hope I'm not making too big of a statement over here, but if he's mamish, as you describe, a gun runner and someone who just sells to the highest bidder and is providing, weapons that will cause loss of innocent life, that is probably a forbidden way to make a living and would be very similar to taking money from someone who's involved in tax evasion and other forbidden ways of being able to make money. And I think it's beneath the dignity of Jewish institutions to have names of such people on the institutions. I think the Marsha talks about this in the Sechus Bab Basra. I would, as enticing as it is to get a building built, for an important institution like my shul or any other shul, I think we should have a little more bitachon that the Ribono Shel Olam will allow us to raise the money in a proper way.
And so let me just push down this avenue a little. I had, it was a very unpleasant experience of being invited to somebody's home recently, and that person made a very large amount of money as owning a tobacco company, which I would say that a tobacco company and a gun company are that much, not that dissimilar, that there is, it may even be worse, a tobacco company, that there
is much worse. Tobacco companies much worse. They kill much more people.
It killed more people, and there is no way that a tobacco could be used safely. One cigarette is bad for you, whereas arguably a gun could be used for hunting. Would you think that yeshivas, maestas, you know, printing companies, etc., would you have a problem taking a donation from somebody whose source of their income was from, you know, selling tobacco?
Just to quickly comment on something you said in there, you said that one cigarette can be bad for you, and I am completely in agreement with you, but I'll just mention, I once asked a shaila to Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein. A person was in it, walking down the aisle in a Beis Medrash, and he noticed, and a pack of cigarettes fell out of his pocket. So a friend of mine saw the pack of cigarettes on the floor, so he wasn't sure what to do. Hashavas Aveda, or do you give back
favor, or left favor.
Yeah, so I asked Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein what he thought. I was pretty convinced that you should not do Hashavas Aveda in this situation. And Rav Zilberstein said, maybe he only smokes, he gives out one cigarette per person, and he's not keeping it all for himself. And one cigarette's not going to harm a person. And, you know, maybe he's selling it only one per customer. I thought that was like such an unusual psak, but he was under the impression that one cigarette's not going to hurt a person. I think it's that's a dangerous psak. So I would agree with you that there is no real proper use for cigarettes. As far as guns are concerned, you also happen to mention, there's also Derech Agav, and it doesn't really answer your question, but you happen to mention that, you know, guns have perfectly acceptable uses, like hunting. That assumes hunting is a perfectly acceptable use. Yeah, I'm sure you're familiar with the famous
Yehuda. Yeah, he says for Gayim it is, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, that's not something we aspire to. It's not something we should want to say, right? You sell it to Gayim for that purpose. But the reason I'm raising that point is that I find that a lot of people, when they talk about this issue or any highly political issue, people talk, even from Jews, tend to talk about this through the lens of politics and not through the lens of Torah. You know, they and people pick teams. So if you're a liberal, they toe the liberal line, and if you're conservative, they toe the conservative line. And it's very important as Jews that we recognize that there are some of these values are halachic values. Certainly, security, loss of human life, these kinds of things are serious halachic concerns and Jewish concerns. And some of them are really not, meaning the right to own a gun so that you can go hunting has no basis in halacha or Judaism. There's no reason why that would encourage us to make laws that would be more gun friendly. There are other reasons, you know, and other sensitivities that are halachic, but I think it's very important for Jews to keep that in mind.
So Rabbi Leibowitz, we had a number of people tell us that, you know, the Second Amendment's right to bear arms, because this way the government, you know, having a private militia so that the government can't take over the country, etc., that would fall under the category of the Magnu Alayu, or like the what's the Lashon of the Shulchan Aruch? Ha Yisrael Sheichdem Ben Akum V'Karsulam Bris Muta Limkel Kuzayin La'akum The Geisais Hamelech, they shall Isidim Mohammed, Tsari Hamadina, Venimtsum Aginim Aleim, Shreim Shreim Besaychem. How does that sound to you, that the Second Amendment's purpose is to protect us from a government that goes astray, and therefore it has a din of Maginu Elayu? How would you respond to that?
I'm a little torn by this, because certainly as Jews, we should have a long memory, and we should realize that there have been many, many situations throughout Jewish history, unfortunately, where we were unable to protect ourselves and governments did turn against us. So I'm certainly sensitive to that idea. The application is very tricky, though, because we do also have to keep in mind the greater good and how much loss of life is involved in not doing proper background checks and making sure that the right people, you know, that the guns end up in the right hands. Someone, you know, I gave a very short cheer, not taking a stand on gun control, but just going through some of the basic makoros in one direction or another. And a fellow sent me an email with a passage from a sefer called Mesoras Moshe, which I guess is Rav Mordechai Tendler wrote up some hanhagos of his grandfather or comments he heard from him, and he said that that Rav Moshe was matmiya. How could it be that they allow every yatz to buy a revolver in America? He says mistama sheyesh she'ein shum medina acheres that's matir such a thing. He says it's a very dangerous thing. So I do understand the concern, but this is there are counter concerns. So it's not everything.
Well, Rabbi Leibowitz, as always, it's an honor and a pleasure to have you on with us. Thank you for your time.
My great pleasure. Take care. Thank you.
Also, bye-bye.